Hello and welcome to another edition of Heart of Healthcare. My name is Dr. Jan Bonhoeffer, and these podcasts are about helping physicians restore balance in their lives so we can co-create a medical system that benefits everyone. A quick reminder that you can find more information about our nonprofit Heart-Based Medicine and the work we do to support healthcare professionals at heartbasedmedicine.org.
Welcome to the Heart of Healthcare podcast, Series 2, Episode 1, when today we're asking, how can medical health professionals reconnect with a deeper sense of serving love as a guiding principle of healthcare?
Today we're asking a very special medical professional about how we need to reconnect with our deeper sense of serving love as a guiding principle of healthcare. One that provides us with the abilities to be fully emotionally present with patients and, at the same time, not become entangled or subsumed by the emotions that present themselves. This week, I wish to welcome my fellow podcast panelist, Dr. Dan Dinnenberg. Hello, Dan.
Thank you, Jan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And our very special guest, Dr. Ron Schneebaum. Hello and welcome, Ron.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be with you guys, and it's great to hear about what you guys do.
He's a pediatrician working out of the Children's Hospital in New Hampshire in the U.S., and he has a strong vision for how medical health practitioners need to get better at finding the human behind the condition. This is so much aligned with heart-based medicine. I couldn't believe it when I read it. So he should have actually founded and led and be on the board of heart-based medicine. So from his personal podcast, Ron often shares how he's working to create a medical system where heart and mind work in harmony with love and compassion to create a more powerful healing relationship between physician and patient, where both share equal roles and contributions to a healing journey. And his approach to patients is to listen to them and to understand, whether they ask or express this or not, their own personal, maybe vulnerable concerns. And his focus is on helping medical students understand this approach, so that they in turn get to feel happy, worthwhile, connected, and of real value to their patients. I can't express how excited I am that you are with us today, Ron.
As I listened to your lovely description, I got goosebumps thinking, I like that guy. What sounds like he's doing. So one of the things that I came to after my years in practice and my years about thinking about life is I came to the realization that we think both with our intellects and with our hearts. And what I mean by that is the intellect deals with facts and figures and practical details in life. The heart also thinks, and what I think happens with the heart is the heart has the ability to picture somebody else's viewpoint and what they're thinking of, and then to imagine from that standpoint, what do I do to heal? How can I help? How can I serve them? So if they put that into what goes on in a visit with a person, is I prepare myself for what their visit seems like it's about. And then when I go into the room, I'm there listening to how I can help and listening to what their problems are. And it's trying to imagine from their viewpoint what's going on. And if I couple that with what I've learned, you know, then we have something. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Thank you. It is so crucial to what heart-based medicine is about.
And it's really, it's about loving, it's about finding the human in each person that you see and saying, how do I help this person? How do I support this person? How do I help them feel good about who they are, appreciate what's going on, and so on?
Completely get that. A true therapeutic alliance starts with a beginner's mind, with the curiosity of what is it that you actually want? Yeah. And then we can show up as guides, as coaches, rather than as the ones who know it all and done it all.
And then it also fits in where you think with using your intelligence with it, I saw a fellow who was just diagnosed, a 9-year-old diagnosed with diabetes. And I looked at my notes before I went into the room and saw that the parents had just gotten divorced recently. So I thought when I go in, one of the questions is, how do the parents work together with this? They're newly divorced and diabetes changes your life and it changes how you manage a child because it means they're insulin dependent. So my job isn't taking care of the diabetes, but it's to see that the family is thriving. And it's to think also this kid, it's not just his numbers, but how do I help him through life so diabetes isn't a stumbling block and doesn't cause him not to succeed? How do I make it so that he's okay with what he's got?
That is so important. So it's really seeing who is the person beyond their condition. So yeah. Condition is just such a tiny fraction of the individual experience of each of our patients. We consider this like the key central thing about their life because it's the bit that concerns us as healthcare professionals, is that little thing that is the diagnosis. It may be a very prominent, if you like, suffering point in their life. It may be very prominent to them in terms of the signs and symptoms they're experiencing. But then we're kind of reducing this whole person to their signs and symptoms. And by doing so, we help ourselves in making a diagnosis and offering some treatment advice, but we may actually miss a large part about that person and we're missing.
And it's fascinating what you mentioned, because it's the signs and symptoms that are the door to our connection. So if I don't deal with their problem well, then they have no interest in my deeper stuff. You know, so my key is to be a great, you know, is to answer their questions, but to also look deeper at the same time.
Yeah. So let me understand how, so you're highlighting the importance of listening and curiosity to really serve well. You want to understand well. And that understanding,
well, it's a little bit more, it's more than curiosity. It's listening with the heart. It's listening. What the heart wants to do is the heart wants to offer love and support and healing. So it's, how can I help this person? So it's listening with open-mindedness, but also with thinking, how do I help them?
So what do you mean by listening with the heart? Can you explain that?
Sure. Let me think of an example from just today. So if I see someone who's worried about their baby, and what they're worried about isn't something of consequence. So I saw someone today whose child is speech is a little bit delayed. Mm-hmm. So I think to myself, what are this person's concerns? And how do I address their concerns? Do I think the child truly has a problem or not? If I think the child doesn't, how do I help them through this to understand that, nope, this is a normal part of development, that some little ones run first and some talk first. And it doesn't mean because somebody is talking a little bit later that they have any kind of problem. So it's listening to, trying to get a sense of what all of the concerns are, thinking about, are they real? And then saying, how can I help her so that she's comfortable and not worried about something she doesn't need to worry about? If on the other hand, I thought there was a problem, then it's saying, okay, this is what we need to do to solve this problem.
So let's say there's two possibilities for you to listen. One is you hear with your ears and you're processing the information that you get, and you compare notes with the knowledge you've acquired during medical school and 40 years of your experience. And you're making a judgment call on whether this is a true problem or this is a perceived problem, whether this is serious or not, and what the diagnosis might be. So this is kind of your, if you like, rational thinking.
Exactly.
This is your doctor making a differential diagnosis, rational thinking. And in contrast to that, listening with the heart then means seeing the patient and what their concerns truly are, regardless of what you call the thing or how you rate the thing or how you classify what you're observing. But you're actually opening up as a human being to this other human being, empathizing and really exploring what does it feel like for this person to have a condition that my brain tells me they have.
Yeah, and then saying, and how do I help them? So one of the ways that I can help is I say, okay, suppose we're talking about somebody who, a child who understands everything but doesn't talk a lot, and it's an 18-month-old. So I'll say one of the things that happens that I think about is one of the things that happens is we look at physical things such as not talking, and we don't look at other things. So children at the same time are also observing. And so baby Mozart or baby Rembrandt, did they talk a lot? Or did baby Rembrandt sit and say, that shadow is blue, that shadow is purple? And so she mentions, I said that, she said, yeah, she really does observe. And then I said, and then again, I want to try to help her with her worry. So I said, is there anybody you know, have you ever met an adult who doesn't talk? You know, and it doesn't exist.
No.
And so if somebody understands and they have language in place, then the other part comes along. And so it's, again, trying to understand her concerns and then putting it to some kind of perspective. And then further than what we did is I said, listen, so people, you know, so she was worried enough. So I said, let's have you see someone who works with speech development. But on the other hand, while you do that, don't worry. So it's covering all the bases of saying, how do I help this person who came in with this concern and address it as fully as I can so that she knows that I'm there, I'm thoughtful, I'm considering what's going on, and I've considered every aspect of what I could imagine and let her know that I'm there for her.
You let her know that you're there for her, regardless of the diagnosis, regardless of the other stuff that is going on and the content that is being shared.
Yeah, I'm there for you no matter what. So if it turns out you call me in a while and say, look, I'm still worried and so on, that's okay. I don't judge you with how you hold this whole thing. Let me just help you through it.
Beautiful. So there's one track that is the diagnosis, the signs and symptoms leading to a diagnosis. And the other track is that you're having a concern and I'm with you in that concern. And together we go through the concern as at the same time as we address the illness. And sometimes you say physicians need to reconnect and make medicine a healing art once more.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Is this the reconnection you're talking about?
Well, there, when one human being meets another, there's healing in that. A fascinating thing that happens, if you have a problem or a concern and you talk to a friend of yours and that friend simply listens to you, at the end of that period of time, you say, thanks so much for listening. I feel so much better. And I went, what's that magic about? And I used this model of a boat on a boat going through a canal. When you go through a canal, what happens is the water levels, you're in one lock, one little place, and you have to go to the next lock. And that next lock, when the water levels get raised, the boat can go from one lock to the next. When you really listen to someone and you get on the same wavelength and you see this person, no matter who they are, as a fellow human being, and you're really listening to them, then the boat that travels and what the equilibrating and getting on the same page allows love to pass from one to the other. I think that's why when you listen to your friend and it feels better, it's a really loving act to put everything else aside and listen to your friend. So listening to a patient and knowing them there for you does more than just your medical stuff. They know he's there for me or she's there for me.
That is beautiful. And they know this much deeper, that's a deeper knowing than knowledge. They're somehow receiving something from you. They're receiving their feeling. They're observing, they're witnessing your genuine interest in how they're doing.
And then you feel a connection. And then you feel, I can trust this guy. If I have another question later on, I can talk to him.
Wow, Dan, doesn't that sound like music to our ears?
let me just throw in one other part. From the physician side, how does it help the physician? One of the things I've come to realize is that there are two ways we achieve happiness. And they're equal, or they're just two different ways. One is through successes in the outer world. So here it is, I'm a doc and I get to this level and, you know, whatever. Or you get the house you like. And that's one level of being happy. The other side are connections that you make with people. So after I leave that conversation and I feel like I really connected with with that parent or that kid, I feel like I feel better about my life and who I am, and I'm ready for the next one.
That is very important. That is really valuable what you're sharing. Thank you, Ron. Dan, I think I know you a little bit, so you must be itching now.
It's wonderful hearing what Ron has been saying. It's profound. And I think the idea of that boat traveling to the next lock is the way I think of that is just that coherence, that connection point between your heart and your patient's heart is who you're working with. And that vibrational frequency just aligns. And then ultimately that's when healing can occur. And I think that Ron is showing that. He's showing that every day. What interests me, because I think some of us that intuitively practice medicine in this way, and we've evolved to connect with our patients in this way, it's really about training. How do we that are doing this share that? How do we understand what we're really doing? Because some of us that are doing it is just being humans, right? It's natural. Exactly. It is just simple communication in the same way that Ron talks about that really good friend. You didn't go to really good friend training school. You just wanted to hear. And you're actually what you said earlier, Jan, you're curious and you're deeply listening and you're showing up and you're bringing up what Ron said. How can I serve you? How can I help you? How can I support you? Because you actually care. So where I'm going with this is I'm really curious from Ron, how do you, between patients, how do you check in with your heart? How do you allow yourself to not let the last patient in and to show up fully resourced for this next patient? To be able to listen and to be able to serve. And I think that's one thing that really is interesting for all of us, because if we can figure that out, then that comes into all of us are interested in training.
Yeah.
And how to help this next group of physician leaders understand how to bring care and love into our field. And so, Ron, you have all this experience and you've been doing this. Do you have a methodology or does it just come so naturally to you in a busy day?
Well, so now it's a methodology. And the methodology is the idea that we think with both heart and mind. So the intellect side is what protects me. So what I mean by that is I can spend time with a person who's got a very significant and deep and serious problem. I just saw a family today where the grandparents are taking care of the child because their daughter died of a drug overdose. And so I could listen to them. I could emote with them. I could be there with them. And then I can know that out of the world, there are gazillions of people that have very serious problems. I didn't create it and I can't fix everybody. I can be present for these people, be totally there, and then I can close that door and now be present for the next person. Because with my intellect, I'm not there to save them. I'm there to be with them in the best way that I can. If that means helping them, that's great. So I can help them in the one area they came in for, which is talking about the kids' school functioning, and can talk about that. And then I can, with all my heart and all my love, then say, it's not my life. And I can close the door and open to the next person. Does that answer your question at all?
It does. It's trying to figure out, though, even taking that to the point of how do you, let's say, communication is this mode of healing and showing up and being of service. How do you instill that into the young people entering our field? And like, I hear you completely, but how do you close that, open a dialogue with that new patient? Because I think what we're up against is what Jan and I consistently end up in conversations about is what's going on in burnout or maintaining resilience. And what we're talking about here is connecting into heart and how to bring that heart into communication. And how does that methodology that you use show up to train others?
So I do a podcast that I call On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind. And in one of the episodes, I describe having been in the hospital at a code for a baby who didn't make it. And then I had to come to my office. I had about a 10-minute drive, and I had to come to my office and see a 5-year-old for their well visit. And so I had to drop what happened in the hospital and be present for this happy, delightful 5-year-old. And you go through that your entire day. And it's saying, when I open to somebody, there's a difference between opening to somebody where I'm personally involved and opening to somebody where I'm present. It's a little bit of a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not personally involved in terms of, this isn't my family when somebody tells me this story. This is somebody that I'm professionally caring for. It's not that I'm cold and I'm hard, but there's a place where I can close the door. I can be open, but also know that I'm there professionally to be open. I'm not there to be sucked in. Does that help at all?
It's really important. Let me try and see this from another perspective. If we care, let's say medical errors are the third leading cause of death in the U.S. And so that's after heart disease and cancer. So if we're looking at critical incidents, so we're looking at medical errors where we as healthcare professionals screw up, I would argue that through all the critical incident meetings that I sat, 8 out of 10 are based on a lack of care at the moment when it happened. If I ask the question, would the same error have occurred if it was your mother, your sister, or your daughter? The answer would be 8 out of 10 times. It would be no. I would have gone that extra mile. It's that personal connection, that personal care, that deeply felt care where you want to make sure that absolutely everything is perfect and you're not screwing up drug doses or you're not, you know, spilling stuff or exchanging or mistaking things, right? So now you're making an important difference between caring for a family member or a kind of personal life acquaintance or relation and a professional one. Can you explain a little bit, what is the difference here? Like on a heart level, what is the difference?
Let me tell you a funny one, and then I'll tell you a more serious one. People sometimes ask, when I hear, I'm a pediatrician, so babies cry all the time. And I say to folks, when I hear children cry, it's like a conductor of an orchestra hearing the orchestra tune up. I don't take it personally. Except the only times that I did was when the babies who were crying were the ages of my children.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see someone, my sister recently had bone cancer in her jaw.
Oh.
That was really, that affected me differently than if a patient comes in with that.
Yeah.
When the patient comes in with that, I can open to it. I can be there. I can be involved. I can care for them. But there's a place where I don't jump in. There's something where I can use my professional skills, my mind, as I put it, to say, no, you can't lose yourself in this. Because it doesn't help anything. This is someone who's coming to me with a problem. I can address it as fully as I can, but I can't take their life as my responsibility.
Hmm.
With my sister, she's my life. I mean, she's my flesh and blood. There's a place where I have to be able to protect myself so that I can be fully, fully present.
It's really interesting. So let's dive even more deeper here. Okay. So we have the level of care that we have for our sister, as you said. We have the level of care that is a deeply felt, heartfelt care, but professional care for a patient. And then we have one step further away from that, which is, I would call it objectification or othering of a person, right? Where we actually reduce and simplify compress a patient into their signs and symptoms and disease, and it's an interesting case, right? So now the heart's out of the equation. Now we're just now it's just a kind of Dr. House exercise, right? We're just intrigued by the medical conundrum, right? There's no care anymore. And I guess we all know, like in 20 years, 25 years in my situation, 40 years in your situation of pediatric care, we probably know the full spectrum. Sometimes it may actually be our relatives or our daughters, our mothers. Sometimes it may be professional care. And sometimes we're just kind of really, we kind of keep a distance where we're really just solving a case. I guess we all know that spectrum. What does it take for you to really activate your heart to be fully caring professionally for a patient and not slide into the objectification?
So one thing I do before I come into the office in the morning is I close my eyes and I ask love to join me.
Wow.
And I know that in every situation, every room, what I want to do is serve love. That's my goal. And yeah.
Nothing to add here.
And yeah, so because of that, I can meet. So, and then again, this balance between the heart and the mind, the intellect can help me to solve the medical problems. And on that side, I want to be as good a doc as I can possibly be, because that's what they come to me for. The connection stuff, that's like gravy. But I mean, it's not gravy. It's, you know, I think that's really the lifeblood. But there are two completely different sides that join who I am as a whole. If I think of it sometimes, I think if you play a musical piece, there are the high notes and the low notes. There's, you know, there's polarities. So there's the part of the physical reality, which has to be addressed. But there's the human being with the physical reality. It's not forgetting that part. I think what we do in medicine sometimes, we forget that part.
Yeah. Isn't it? So what I hear from you, Ron, is really touching. It's really, it really resonates deeply with me. So if you're, what I hear from you is that you've been trained as a medical student in a very renowned medical school in Tel Aviv, and you've been going through the, let me call it, a very highly qualified and yet standard medical training of Western medicine, where you learn about all the, if you like, objective, scientific, academic ways of seeing and understanding patients and their suffering. And through the years of your own experience and actually being with real people rather than with books and concepts and theories, in actually caring for them, you're kind of shifting the paradigm from, first of all, you have to know your shit, sorry, and then you can add to it some, you can also be a nice doctor. And you've really completely shifted paradigm from saying, no, primarily I'm a human being. I'm asking for love to join me with every patient. My role is to be a servant of love. And then as a secondary skill set, like as the garnish, as the gravy on top of that, let me add a little bit of my current state of ignorance of medicine. Is that what I'm hearing?
I cheated a little bit. And the way I cheated was I went to medical school late. And I was working in business. First, I was a school teacher, and I worked in a logging camp in Alaska. And I was working in an advertising-related business in New York. And I was sitting reading a newspaper one day, and an ad fell onto my lap about a pre-med program at Columbia University for people that graduated from college that want to go to medical school but didn't have the math or science courses. And I closed my eyes for a second when I saw that ad. It somehow rang true to me. And an image came to me of somebody having a heart attack. And I pictured the person who had the heart attack would want a good physician to diagnose them and treat their problem. But they'd also have questions about who am I? What does this do to my life? Where do I go from here? And I thought they wouldn't go to a psychiatrist. They would talk to that same doctor. And that was the reason I went to medical school. So I carried that with me before I went to medical school. And I knew that medical school never solved that question. They never addressed that. I had to learn that on my own. And so I always knew I had to learn that. That was always part of what I wanted to do.
Wow, you knew that throughout the training already because of your previous experience as a teacher and as actually having worked with children and knowing what they
and,
were
and that experience that I had where I realized that the reason I'm going to medical school, it has the medical part, but it has the interpersonal part.
Wow, what a blessing. What a key message to learn for medical students today is like, how differently do you go through medical school if you have this awareness crystal clear ahead of you as you go through this training?
Yeah. So when I talk to students, I say, be the doctor that you'd want your grandparents to go to. It's that simple.
Fabulous. Ron, what is the central message through all these years? What is the central message as how we can engender a much more heart-centered working environment? And what do you see as the positive long-term effect of such an approach?
So the central part is, with each person, have your mind completely fresh and meet one human being and say, how do I help?
And this I that is asking the question, how can I help? This inner disposition that you're talking about, I believe you're referring to the one willing, intending to serve love, exactly, rather than the one who's learned a lot of tricks at medical school.
That's it. How do I serve love?
So how can I help can also be phrased as, how can I serve you lovingly?
Yeah. If you're worried, how do I help with your worries? If you have a problem, how do I help you with your problem?
And solving or helping with worries and helping with fear and suffering may be far beyond offering a medical technical solution.
It's connected. It's the same thing. It's too, so it turns out, for whatever reason, I decided to do modern traditional medicine. Clearly, modern medicine doesn't have all the answers to everything, but that's the only tool I have. So how do I use that? But still, that's my key to the door of their hearts, of who they are as people. And my next dream is now, how do I normalize this? How do I make this so that this is standard care in medicine? You hear such terrible things about doctors not communicating, people worrying and not being treated like human beings.
So what does it take for you? What are the the cornerstones? If you were to highlight 3 or 5 key bits that we would really want to see as these are the, let's prioritize 3 or 5 things that absolutely need to change for medicine to be more heart-based and more human. What would it be?
I haven't thought of it that way, but if I think about it, it's to say the goal of medicine isn't to extend life. The goal of medicine is to give the best medical care that includes quality of life. Yeah, the goal of medicine isn't to extend life. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. That's a radical statement. But my sense is if we did that, I think people would live longer and live better. If I take a look now, what we do is we treat the body and try to extend life, and yet everybody's worried and depressed. And we miss something.
Couldn't agree more with you. Is actually questioning the Hippocratic Oath is a really good investment of our time.
Yeah.
It's like, what does it mean today when we're saying first do no harm? What does it mean today when we talk about protecting life and saving life? What does it actually mean today?
Yeah. Yeah, it's how do we thrive? That's really the question. How do we as people thrive?
In your teaching of students, what would you change?
In teaching medical school, it's treating the person besides the illness. So that we'll learn about asthma, but then when you get into practice, you realize that if you can translate that into somebody's life and understand what it's like to live with asthma, and then you can talk to somebody about how they're doing and how they're managing, then you can really have good asthma care. So it's not, so the learning about asthma is the tool for being able to help this person.
Beautiful. Dan, you've been into standard medical training. You've been into standard medical care, and you've added to your tool set.
Yeah. I think, Ron, what you're really elucidating is the key, which is we use our medicine as an entry point. And that's showing up for someone because that's what they come in for. But the deeper healing is more than just the curing. The curing is the prolonging of life or curing what's going on. But the healing is bringing wholeness. And I believe what you're saying is what resonates with all of us right now is it's a dance. And it's the relationship. And it's showing up in service and in love that brings this more holistic view of how to support someone. Because when they feel supported and witnessed, acknowledged, then they continue to share what's really going on. So you That's start right. to be like, oh, yeah, I show up for your asthma, but understanding the ecosystem behind it, and you realize that there is grief or there's family dynamic issues going on. Now they're sharing that. And they show up with that. And if you keep coming back, as Ron's saying, showing up in love, in service, then the next question comes in and you can serve that. And you're deepening your relationship and you're deepening your service and you're ultimately meeting them where they are along the way.
Yeah, that's
and
beautiful.
I think, yeah. And I think one of the things that's the most profound that comes out of this conversation is, there is a paradigm shift that needs to happen. We've lost our way a little bit in medicine. And so how do we that still have our finger on the pulse of this psycho-emotional connection based in heart, how do we share that? How do we bring that? And Jan, I love what you're trying to get to, which is the central messages, which is whether it be the relationship or love or presence, but how do we bring that into those coming into our field so they realize that there's so much more than they're learning? And as Ron said, you bring the experience of your life and your humanity into the relationship.
Yeah. So I teach third year medical students and they'll commonly say, and I teach them for a day. You know, they'll come to my office to see patients with me and I'll talk about stuff like this. It's not uncommon. They'll say this was the best day I had in medical school. So there's a thirst for it. There's a hunger for it. So as we become more clear in ourselves and we meet people the way you're describing you do, then it becomes so obvious that then you can start to talk about it with others.
Ron, it is so refreshing to hear from you, and it is so clearly authentic. You so clearly walk your talk. You clearly share what you live and what your heart has called you for to become a physician, and you actually manage to live up to it, and you manage to maintain personal sovereignty through all the years of training and residency and actually staying there by kindling the light that got you into it. It's yeah. really refreshing and heartwarming. This is at the heart of what we want to nurture and nourish as a community of like-hearted healthcare professionals, physicians, nurses, therapists here at Heart-Based Medicine. So thank you so much.
It's so wonderful that you guys band together to do this. And I want to plug my podcast. It's called On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind. It's available wherever there are podcasts. And it's really to carry this theme, to try to make it so we can put it in all of our everyday lives. So it's with everybody we meet that we meet them as human beings.
Ron, we'll make it known through the social media and the channels that we have available to us. And we're really looking forward to connect with you, to work further with you, to meet, to expand and deepen the conversation. It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Pleasure is mine. It was such a joy to be able to talk with you guys. Thank you so much.
A beautiful way to inspire our hearts for those trying to share heart in medicine. I'm so appreciative. Thank you, Ron.
Wow. And I hope for our listeners that you have enjoyed the chat with Ron Schneebaum. And you can find more information at heartbasedmedicine.org. And I deeply appreciate if you could click subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on. Until next time, thanks for listening and take care.
Be well. Thank you.
This has been Heart Based Medicine Production. Thanks for listening.